You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hey, this is Joe R. Lucas, finally back from the Final Four. Hope you enjoyed those special episodes. Before we get to another big-name interview, I want to remind you to download F4 Glory episode of The Crossover when Theo Papaloukas, Nikola Vucic, and I got together for some expert analysis of CSKA Moscow's EuroLeague triumph. But right now, it's all about Tony Parker. The great point guard joined me on the phone from the U.S., and we talked about his start in the NBA, about being a part of the Big Three with the San Antonio Spurs, especially under legendary coach Greg Popovich. He also chatted about his basketball academy, what he plans to do after retirement, and his involvement with the EuroLeague with wildcard team ASVEL. That's all to come right here. Hey, listeners, I'm giving a big shout out at the Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And I know the season is over. We just wanted to give you one last taste of the Crossover before we shut things down until October. And I thought there'd be no better way to bring you a very special guest. He was voted the 2001 French League Rising Star that turned into a four-time NBA champion and a six-time NBA All-Star. So I guess they knew what they were talking about when they voted him in as a Rising Star. He's amongst so many other things, the president of a French basketball club, ASVEL, a team that'll be joining the EuroLeague next season. Please welcome my next guest, Mr. Tony Parker. Tony, how are you, my man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Man, thanks so much for taking the time. We've been trying to do this throughout the whole season, but our schedules just couldn't coordinate it in time.
Yeah, better late than never.
There you go. Hey, I saw your vlog yesterday with one of my boys, Frank Lawler. And, you know, I looked at the vlog and I'm watching it and I'm thinking, man, they put the pretty faces on the video blog and they left me for the podcast, man. You know, my mom always said I had a face for radio, so I guess she was right.
Hey, it's okay. I love radio, so that's fine. I love doing radio. I did radio for 9 years in a row. I had my own show in France, and I was doing every week talking with all the different athletes around the world. So radio is fine. It's great.
You don't have a face for radio, though. You're a better-looking guy than I am. You should be on TV, my man.
I'll do both.
There you go. Hey, before I start, my kids and I had this ongoing argument. We had it all weekend long because they knew I was going to be talking to you. Who's the better point guard in the NBA, John Stockton or Steve Nash?
It's funny that you asked me that because a lot of my friends, too, they always talk about John Stockton and Steve Nash. And my thing is they're both great, and it's hard to compare, you know, different point guards, a different generation. It's just hard to do that. And that's why I love both point guards. I played against Steve Nash in my prime and Steve when it was in his prime too. And so we had some great battles. And so both of them are great. I played against John. He was towards the end of his career. I was at the beginning of my career. And he was a great point guard too.
That's way too politically correct of an answer from my Crossover show, man. I need you to dig in a little bit more for me, man. We try not to be politically correct here, but yeah, I've done my research and I found out some things about you that I didn't know. You were actually born in Belgium. I don't think many people know that.
Yeah. I'm born in Belgium. My dad was a basketball player and he played in the U.S., played college, and then decided to pursue his career in Europe, and he played in the Netherlands. That's where he met my mom. And then he played in Belgium for 2 years. And in the last year, that's where I was born. We only stayed like 2-3 months because then he moved to France. And both of my brothers, they're born in France.
Okay, so you're the older of the three brothers. So what's your passport now? You got American passport, a French passport? You got the dual citizenship?
I got American passport and a French passport. I got dual citizenship. But I can always ask for the Belgium and the Netherlands passport. Like that, I can be like Jason Bourne. That'd be fun.
I like that. So you became a French citizen at 15, but you already had the American passport at that time, I assume.
Exactly.
Yeah, you said your dad played in the States. He played at Loyola University in Chicago,
Loyola,
right?
Yeah, Loyola Chicago, yeah. The college team who made the Final Four 2 years ago, yeah.
Exactly. I found out your mom was a model. Your great uncle was an Olympic gold medal winner in rowing. You got a couple of brothers that play college basketball on professional levels. This whole thing runs in the family.
Yeah, it's a sports family, and we love sports and a very competitive family.
Now, what? Don't get mad at me now, but what made a short kid from France that played soccer try his hand at a sport that wasn't so big in France at the time when you were your age? I mean, most kids are running around with that football underfoot.
Yeah, I just fell in love with the game. You know, I played soccer for 3 years at 6 to 9 years old, but then I decided to play basketball. You know, I saw Michael Jordan playing on TV, and my dad, you know, played basketball, and I just fell in love with the game. And so that's how I started playing basketball every day and just loved it.
I have the opportunity to speak with a lot of kids nowadays, and I talk to them all the time, you know, players and young kids, about seizing opportunity, recognizing opportunities, and then, of course, seizing the moments. I was reading in the year 2000, when you were 18, you played in the Nike Hoop Summit. It was a Europe All-Stars against the U.S. All-Stars. You dropped 20.7 assists and 4 rebounds in that game. First of all, who played in that game against you on the U.S. team?
Nike Hoop Summit, it was Zach Randolph that really had a career. That's the only one who really had a career in the NBA.
Okay. Did you pursue this game, go into this game, knowing that this could be an opportunity for you in the States to play either college?
Definitely. You know, back in the day, you have to put it in perspective. You know, it was not a lot of Europeans, you know, in the NBA. And the Nike Hoop Summit was a big game to showcase your talent. And so it was huge for me, because I know that's the game where the Spurs starting to follow me. And then they watched me play my whole second year professionally in Paris. And so that was a big game to basically get noticed by NBA scouts.
Yeah, sometimes it just takes that one moment, that one game, to be seen by the right people.
Exactly. And now it's different, because now everybody's got European scouts. Now they're everywhere.
Right.
Even on the 18-year-old tournament, you'll see scouts. You know, it starts very, very early now. Because when I arrived with Dirk Nowitzki and Pau Gasol and Andrei Kirilenko, when us four really made it, that's when it really exploded. And now you have 80-plus, you know, international guys, you know, in NBA. You have, like, I think 11 or 12 French guys. Now it's, like, normal. But back in the day, it was not normal to have a European on your team. And I'm the first European point guard to make it in the NBA. So.
You were the first European point guard. There was a couple of Europeans before you. But
they were more guards. They were more guards. Right. You know, obviously, Drazen Petrovic was the biggest one, you know. Sasha Georgievich tried a little bit, but I was the first point guard to make it in the NBA and to be a starter and to be playing for a championship team. But back then
it was a big man's game.
Yeah, it was a big man's game, because you had Vlade, you had Peja, you had Šarūnas Marčiulionis and Arvydas Sabonis. It was the big guys who was making it in the league, Tony Kukoc.
Right. But you had, from that Nike Summit, you had offers by UCLA, Georgia Tech, amongst other schools. What made you go back to France and not follow in your dad's footsteps? I mean, he was a college basketball player that went on to play.
Because I didn't want to play against guys of my age. I wanted to play against older guys. And since I was 15, 14 years old, I always play against guys who was 2-3 years older than me. Then when I was 15, I was playing against professionals, basically. And then when I was 17, I was already playing professionally. And I always play against older guys, and I thought that was a quicker way to improve my game. And so that's why when I was 18, I decided to do a second year in Paris, play professionally, keep improving with older guys. And then I made it to the NBA when I was 19.
But as a young kid player, one thing is to be 20 years old and play against a 23-year-old. Another thing is to be 14, playing against a 17 or 18-year-old guy. I mean, you take a beating that way. You learn. I'm not going to disagree with you, because I did the same thing. You learn, but you take a beating going through it.
Oh, for sure, you take a beating, but that makes you tough. It makes you tough mentally, because you make it in the NBA, you have to be really tough mentally. That's the whole key. You have a lot of guys that are talented in the world, and the biggest difference between everybody is the mental part.
Yeah, it's definitely. I'm going to give you a name. Talk about toughness and all that other fun stuff about growing up the hard way. I'm going to give you a name. I want you to tell me what you think of this name. A guy named Lance Blanks.
Yep.
Does he remind you of anything?
Lance Blanks, yeah, for sure. Yeah. He beat me up. He beat me up on my first
Tell us about him, man. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, I had no idea who he was. And I got from flying like 12 hours, and I get off the plane. And I did a workout right away. I was like, I don't know why my agent did that, put a workout right off the plane. But I did a workout against Lance, and Lance was beating me up and just pushing me around. And I was just jet lag and struggling with everything. And so it's funny how close I could have missed the opportunity with the Spurs, because after that workout, Coach Pop was like, I never want to see that little kid ever again.
I read he said you were too soft to play in the NBA, and he wasn't even worried about you.
Exactly. So thanks to R.C. Buford to push Pop to do a second workout. and then after that, the rest is history.
Did you work out for anybody else before the draft, or just San Antonio?
Yeah. I did a lot of workouts. I did workouts for 10 teams, and I was doing so well on my workouts. That's why RC was pushing Pop to see me a second time.
But you did that well, but in the draft, you dropped down to 28th all the way in the draft. How did it just work out that you end up in San Antonio? I mean, if you're doing that well, you work out for 10 teams, and you drop to 28th in the draft, San Antonio picks you up. That was the year before that they won the championship, right? That's why they were drafting 28th. Yeah.
Yeah. But the reason is simple. That's what we talked to earlier. It's because back then it was not very popular to draft the European guys, and especially at the point guard position, where it's the most important position on the court, because you're the key to you know, with the relationship with the players and the coach. You know, you have to relate everything and what the head coach wants, and that's why it was not very, very popular to draft a European point guard.
What were your expectations going into the draft?
I just wanted to be drafted first round, you know. The way I was playing, you know, in Europe, my agent told me I have a good chance to be drafted in the first round. And so I thought I was going to be drafted higher, but hey, everything happens for a reason. And I was very happy to be 28 and go to San Antonio.
Yeah, I mean, it worked out well for you. But that feeling of dropping down in the draft as the draft goes on is a little terrifying for a young kid, isn't it?
it's the worst feeling ever, especially I was 19. I didn't have to put my name right away in the draft, you know, so...
Hey, were you sitting around with your family watching it, and your friends, and all your boys? I mean, I got no place to talk, man. I went in the fourth round. I'm so old. There was like seven rounds when I went. I was like number 72.
Oh, so. Wow. Oh, wow. But back in the NFL style.
Exactly. But, you know, I was sitting with my boys, and we're all just hanging out, and I'm like, oh, man. I mean, I didn't expect to go in the first round, that's for sure, but I didn't expect to go in the fourth either. But It's terrifying, man. You're like, damn, am I going to get picked?
Yeah. It's one of the worst feelings, especially that around 19, you got the lady from the NBA. She comes get me and say, Boston's going to draft you. She gives me the Boston caps. I'm getting ready. And 1 minute after, she's like, oh, no, they changed their mind. I'm like, oh, okay. And I was like, I thought I was going to go 19, and then I went down all the way to the last pick.
So where were you watching? Were you watching it in the States, in New York?
No. I was in the arena. I was at the Madison Square Garden.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. A lot of this is a lot about your story and stuff. I'm not gonna get too much into San Antonio, but I just want to ask you a few questions. I want my listeners to hear straight from you about what it's like to play for Pops.
It was amazing, amazing journey. In my opinion, you know, the best coach in history, and it was just a great journey, and we had such a great relationship. It was just amazing, all the memories that I have playing for him and winning all those championships and all the up and downs. You know, I'm just very happy that I did my career with him.
I saw that you told one of your coaches that you were going to be an NBA player and you're going to be a star in the NBA. So you're a confident kid, but, you know, how is it going in against a guy like Pops? Because he's tough to play with, too. It's not easy to play with him.
He's definitely tough mentally, but I think my young years prepared me to that, playing, you know, against older guys all the time and getting beat up and being tough mentally. And Pop knew that he can throw anything at me. I will respond and come back strong.
So do you think, I mean, it's hard to answer this question, but hypothetically speaking, if you were drafted by another team, let's say Atlanta, for example, and they went through three or four different coaches, you think your career would have been as fruitful and as prosperous as it was?
I think I would have been an all-star. I will just have no championships.
Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili were, I mean, obviously you guys were one of the best trios ever played a game. Did you guys realize there's something special before you started to win championships together? Did you realize that there was that chemistry there with Pops together?
No, I think it built over time. My first year, Timmy didn't talk to me anyway, because I don't think he believed that a European point guard can help him win a championship. And
come on, he looks like such a nice guy from the outside. He didn't talk to you?
He's a great guy, but I had to earn his respect. And then Manu, I arrived before Manu. So when he arrived, he just won the EuroLeague with Bologna. And I was just happy to have him on the team. But I could have never thought that we're going to be like the best trio ever. Like, there's no way that I can think that.
Now, basically, in that situation, y'all, what everybody calls nowadays a super team, you know, but you guys developed into a super team instead of, you know, recruiting in them. Well, exactly. You know, free agency starts on July 1st, and it kind of makes me laugh every year. It seems the players are trying to get themselves together on a team to form one of these three-headed monsters that basically you three created with Bob in San Antonio, but never meant to do it the way everybody's trying to do it now. What do you feel about that, you know, trying to create these super teams?
I just think it's great. I just think it's great for the game, and it's hard to win a championship. You know, you can't do it by yourself, you know, and so
right.
I don't mind it at all. And if everybody does it, then it's fair, you know, so it's fine.
All right, good. I kind of feel like that, too. A lot of people are upset about the whole Golden State thing, but if you can win championships, look at the New England Patriots in football. They just keep winning every year. They figure out a new way to
exactly.
win it. They
don't have, it's fun to win and never gets old. It's so fun to win.
That's one day that never gets old. So after the 17-year run with the Spurs, you leave, and last season you signed with Charlotte. By the way, the injury you had at the end of San Antonio, it doesn't seem like a big – it's not your typical knee injury or your blowout, whatever, but it was a serious injury, wasn't it?
It was a really, really serious injury. It's worse than a knee injury or Achilles tendon, you know, is the worst injury you can have. And so I feel very blessed that I had great doctors to treat me, and the Spurs medical staff was great with me. And I had great people to help me for my recovery, and I was able to have a good year with the Hornets.
And what about going to Charlotte and playing in a different gym, a different franchise, a different city? A lot of people do it all the time, but after 17 years.
No, but for me, it was very weird. It was very weird because
it has to be. That's all.
It's 17 years with the same team, and I thought for sure I was going to finish my career with San Antonio. So it was very, very weird. But at the same time, you know, after a while, you know, I had a great time. You know, I had great guys, great coaching staff. Mitch and Michael, they were great. Everybody was great, and they welcomed me open arms.
It's the first time in your career that I saw you didn't start a game throughout the entire season. Is that something new for you? How do you adapt to that?
That means I'm getting old.
Yeah. Well, my next line here is, I'm not saying that you're ready to retire yet, but there's no doubt it's coming. I'm not looking for breaking news here.
No. For right now, I'm still debating. You know, if I want to play one more year. Like I told everybody, the media in France, I'm 50-50. But
right.
Whatever I decide, you know, it's been an unbelievable career, and it's even better than every dream that I ever had when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's amazing when you can fulfill your dreams and even exceed them. But I speak to athletes a lot, especially like when they're getting ready to retire. And I share my experience when I retired from basketball, and I wasn't fully prepared to leave the game behind. I thought I was, but I really wasn't. But it seems like you, with everything that you have going on along the way, and we're going to transition into this a little bit, is you're already set. You thought about this a long time ago.
For me, I always told my parents and my family, my friends, that if I can't be, you know, Tony Parker anymore, and I can't win the championships, I have no interest, you know, playing basketball. So for me, I'm very I know the situation, and I know you can't play basketball forever. And I made a peace with that a long time ago. I had something very special with the Spurs and with Timmy and Manu, and I know it'll never be the same. And I'm fine with that. I'm in peace with that because I have great memories and we can celebrate, you know, when we all go to the Hall of Fame, you know. But for right now, it's all about, do I want to play one more year and help that young team and stuff like that? But me, I'm in peace with not playing in the team, not winning a championship. You know, I made peace with that a long time ago. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the future. I'm excited about the ASVEL. I'm excited about the EuroLeague. I'm excited about my next life. You know, I can spend more time with my family, more time with my friends. Like, you know, when you're a professional athlete, you have no time. You know, I played every summer with the national team.
Right.
Every year with the Spurs, I went to 8 conference finals, 5 NBA finals. That's a lot of basketball that you play until June. And then beginning of July, every summer, I'm with the national team. So I can never spend time with my friends and family. So I'm excited for my second life. I really am.
nobody realizes whenever you talk about the NBA, you talk about 82 games seasons, but no one realizes how long the playoffs drag out for, too. And, exactly. And when you're getting the conference finals and the finals, you're going until mid-June sometimes, which is a long season, especially playing 82 games in such a short period of time.
Exactly.
Now, you got a lot of stuff going on, but one thing I needed to ask you about, if it's going to be here in your future. Now, I looked you up a little bit, and I found out that you were a rapper, too. You're an avid rapper, and you even had a little bit of a singing career going. Is that still going to go after you retire or not?
No, I'm retired.
You retired from the singing already?
Exactly. I'm retired. It was too tough to do both at the same time, playing basketball and doing the music. And so with my record company, we decided to not do a second album because it was tough to do both at the same time.
So how far did it get then? You actually published an album also.
Yeah, exactly. I had an album and my single was number one for 2 weeks in France. And I had a record deal, but it was just too tough to do both at the same time.
Yeah, it's difficult to do that. The Academy, you have a basketball academy. Tell me about the Tony Parker Academy, what it does and where it's located and all the details about it.
Yeah, but it's located in Lyon, and so it's going to be an international school. It's my way to give back to my country and help the new generation. So I'm very excited about that project. It's going to open in September, and we're going to start with hopefully like 75 students, and we'll build from there and try to build a school where anybody in the world, they can come and learn anything they want to do. So I'm very excited about that project. It's a big project for me.
So it's got this, you're going to have schooling, be able to get educated, teachers, athletes, any sport
exactly,
or basketball?
Exactly. And I'm working with a company where they're going to have their office and my campus. That's why it's called the Tony Parker Adequate Academy. With Adequate, we're going to guarantee that if you come to the academy, you'll get a job when you come out.
Nice. How long ago did that idea start? Where did it originate from?
It started 5 years ago, and then we started working with the mayor and try to find the land and then build it. And so now it's going to open its doors in September.
It seems to me it's real important for you to kind of give back to your country, to give back to France. That's what I see with the academy and with the purchase of the team that we're going to talk about here in a second. But how important is that to you to give back not only to the kids of France, but to the country, because basketball was such a big part of your life?
Yeah, it's just the way I was educated, you know, and just being, grateful and to give back and do my part.
And the other thing that I love that you do is that I saw was the Make-A-Wish Foundation. You're a big part of that, correct?
Yeah, I'm the ambassador of Make-A-Wish. And so every year I do a foundation dinner and try to give back.
That's one of the most amazing organizations in the world. How many times have you experienced going, a kid come in and saying, I want to meet Tony Parker?
Priceless. Yeah, it's very priceless. It's very priceless to see a smile on the kid's face when you help him, realizing his dream. And so it's been a great relationship.
You also always block tickets aside, too, for underprivileged kids. That's something that's special to you also. Because I work a lot here with the European League, with the One Team Association, which ASVEL does, too, during the season. Yep. And it's, to me, it's just amazing to be able to help out as much as you can. We've been so fortunate in playing this beautiful game.
That's why I agree with you. That's why I feel blessed. And that's why, for me, it's important to give back. And so through all those different stuff that I'm doing is my way, to give back and do my part to try to help change people's lives.
Let's get into the real reason of this podcast in a second here. But before ASVEL, I want to talk to you about you. Not only are you the owner of the ASVEL team, but also the women's Lyon basketball team?
Yep. So the project is a global project. I always wanted to do the academy, and I always wanted to do the men's and the women's. For me, it's very important, to fight for women's rights. And so the project was always global. And to do both, for me, men's and women is the same thing. And to help the women's team was a big challenge. I bought the team 2 years ago, and we've been very successful. We won the championships last week. It's the first championship in the history of Lyon basketball.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. We're making a difference. And so it was funny that I won the championship my second year owning the team, because that's what happened with the men's team. I won the championship my second year owning the team. And right now we're on the path to make history. We're in the semis with the men. So So if we can win the championship this year with the men, that'd be the first time in the history that men and women, we win the championship the same year with the same owner. So that'd be pretty cool.
Your brother coached the team, didn't he, for a while, a little bit?
Yeah, my brother is still the assistant coach over there. He's still the assistant coach.
He's assistant coach, okay. Brother,
and my little brother, he's in charge of the youth team, the under 18, and he just made his second Final Four this year.
To have the women's team, the men's team, this foundation and everything, and the academy, you have to have a bunch of people helping you because you're hardly there.
I'm not there during the year, but then I'm there all summer, the whole playoffs. And right. I'm in conference call every day to run the team. Today, with new technology, it's very easy to stay in contact with everybody.
Right, so you're extremely active during the season then?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I watch every game and conference calls all the time, of course.
Has basketball always been big in Lyon, or is it? Or when you joined?
It's a big basketball town, and so everybody's super excited to get the EuroLeague next year.
And what was the reception like of the fans once they realized that you were taking over the team? You were part owner a while back.
Yeah. They were very happy. They were very happy, and now we're just going to keep it going. Told him that we're going to do the academy and it's opening. Told him we're going to do EuroLeague, and now the new arena is going to come soon. So we just keep putting Lyon on the basketball map.
What's the time frame on the new arena for the EuroLeague?
Well, hopefully 2022 or 2023. We'll see.
Nice. And once you give up this game, once you hang up the shoes, so to speak, the way we like to say it in the game, is your plan to come back here and to be the face of the team also and be active on a daily basis?
No, I will always live in the U.S. and I'll just come back and forth, go back and forth, back and forth.
So the U.S. has got you hooked, huh?
Yeah, I love the U.S. It's a great country.
Yeah. But you realize, I mean, obviously, you know, this is a big venture stepping into the EuroLeague now. And the teams that come in, that get in, that don't have the A license, they struggle a little bit because there's so many demands in such a difficult league. Is there like, do you guys have like a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan? Where do you expect to see yourself as a club in 3 years?
That we're in the EuroLeague full-time.
You're in the EuroLeague full-time. And as a 4-time champ, a 6-time All-Star, winning's in your blood, obviously. It was in your blood before you became a 4-time champ. I can tell by the way you're talking to me. But what are the expectations for the team? I mean, deep down, are you like, man, I want to surprise everybody.
We'll see. I'll come back to your radio show, and we'll do a little recap after a year.
We'll hold you to that, Tony Parker. Good luck next season. And don't forget that other episodes of this podcast feature in-depth face-to-face conversations with big names like Obradovic, Spanoulis, Larkin, Lasso, Anga, Kalatas, Blatt, Zichets, Yavtokas, Vucic, Gil, Langford, Granger, and Kosar. Big names all across EuroLeague basketball. And please do not forget to check out my boy, EuroLeague champion Kyle Hines, and his amazing podcast, The Kyle Zone. And don't you worry, the crossover will be back before too long. We'll be getting up close and personal with more big names in the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague. We will see you then.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.